Well, welcome you all. It's certainly a morning. I will say that we had a lot of discussion this morning and how the weather was going to turn out. Here we are, and these mornings are tough to call sometimes. I guess everybody may feel one way or the other. We obviously know how you all feel. The roads were a little rougher than I thought getting here, and so for those who are live streaming and at home, we welcome you, and we're glad that you're safe, and we're glad that you're here still with us. Today is communion, and that should go pretty quick. We are going to ask you to come forward today, as we won't pass the elements. We have less help to do it, and I think if we get enough help up here to do it, half of us will be passing to ourselves. That's how we do it. I'm used to speaking of late in churches of this attendance or even less. I've been filling in for a pastor in Juniata, Altoona, Juniata, North 4th. It's called the First Southern Baptist Church of Altoona. And they had a pastor, George Sanders, who was ill. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, he has passed away December 30th. A pastor from our association has passed away at age 60. And I went to his funeral on Friday night at Hope Baptist out on Maple Hollow Road in Duncansville. And it was a real blessing to me. It spoke to me in ways that I hadn't thought of or realized for a long time. He had been a pastor there for 34 years. It was a very small church for 34 years. And sometimes when I speak at a church like that, I think, would it be better if that church simply dissolved at this point? They have a hard time even functioning with ministry. This is my expert opinion as I sit in these churches and I look around. How do they function with a Bible school? How do they do this? How do they do that? And should they just dissolve and go to a church that maybe is, and this is probably the wrong word, more viable? But I sat and listened to a testimony. You would not have believed the people that this man touched. A man flew 1,400 miles to be at the funeral because he was led to Christ by this guy, this pastor. He was a very, very good in-home pastor. And God called him to a small ministry, but a very effective small ministry. I'd rather certainly be part of an effective small ministry than an ineffective big one. And so it opened my eyes to the importance of having churches of all different sizes and how they minister in different ways. And today is communion, and as I mentioned, and so rather than bringing a sermon, so to speak, a three-point sermon, I'm going to try to bring a little more of a reflection and remembrance. That's what communion is. And it may not seem that way at first, but I promise you I'll get there. Aaron is not here. I felt necessary to mention that he's been ill this week, and that's why he is not here. He also told me he didn't want to follow Cole. And so, no, I'm joking. But the question I'm going to propose a couple of questions. One I'm going to ask three times, and I really want you to focus on that question. But the overall umbrella of what I'm talking about is, how do we find truth today? I mean, that's a big question. How do you find truth? Who defines truth? What is truth? Is there truth? We used to ask, where do I find truth? But that's a question that's only secondary or even thirdly to, is there even any truth? Young people are not asking, where do I find truth? They're wondering if it even exists. Literally. And so, with so much division, how do we know which side of the issue is right? Is there right or wrong? Our society as a whole has first tolerated, then accepted, next embraced, and now today worships many concepts thought to be destructive, sinful lies just a short time ago. Homosexuality, gender reassignment, baby abortion, acquiring wealth that doesn't belong to you because you don't want to work, or because your neighbors have more than you feel you should have some of theirs. I grew up in a single-parent home and in public housing, and I never even thought that I should have what somebody else has because they had more than me. I might have been jealous at times. I might have wished I had more, but I never thought what was theirs was mine. It was just a concept that you did not think of. Now, it's what you should think of, as the world would claim. And this reflection of what is truth, Businesses that were once forced to rightfully so serve all people of all colors are allowed now to refuse service to you based on the fact that you believe a person's skin color shouldn't matter. Think of that. That's true. Go on Facebook and preach that, and you will be banned. That's a business that you walked into, so to speak, and are now kicked right back out the door. Or you believe that what's in a person's heart is who makes them, who defines who they are. If you speak out in opposition to those who now accept these lies, you are minimized, demonized, canceled, or just kicked out of the room or banned from the company's services. Those who decry hate speech do so with a never-ending supply of hate words to those who do not share their own opinions. The only way to escape this ostracizing is to join them. You can't simply stay in the middle to avoid ostracization. You must join them or be kicked out, just totally ostracized from whatever realm that is. Any dissent, you were instantly thrown back out in the street. So how has the church responded? Many have moved into the tolerant stage. Some have accepted this. A few even worship and teach these things. I read an article about a year ago. They had it was a church in D.C. I'm not beating up on anybody whatsoever. I believe it was a United Methodist church. It was a common church, a church that we have association here in Tyrone. And they had an opportunity for children to come forward for gender, choose a new gender. That was the altar call. I watched it on video. And a boy was pulled, kicking and screaming, yelling, "I'm not a girl, I'm not a girl." And that video blew up on the internet for about a day until everybody took it down. Now, you can still find it, but it's a little tougher to find. And that was a church. Obviously not the true church, I understand that. So I ask you this question. Do you believe the Bible? Do you believe the Bible? And I know you talk about preaching to the choir. There may be young people particularly, but not even young people, who come to this church every day who say, "Well, I know the Bible talks about homosexuality, but I'm not really against it." And you ask yourself, do you believe the Bible? Do you believe it in part, which is not to believe it at all, or do you accept it as it is? So let's take the acceptance of homosexuality. I'm going to get to the Gospels here in a moment, but I want to take one of these to make this point, because there's a reason I'm getting to this in this reflection, especially with communion. "You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination." Leviticus 18:22. 1 Corinthians 6, "Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality, nor thieves, nor greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God." I talked to a clergy person about this one time, and it wasn't a real negative, we weren't butting heads. It was just a discussion, a very respectful one. And they said, "Well, homosexuality is only mentioned in the Old Testament. We live under the New Testament." I just read to you from the New Testament. And I thought, you're clergy and you don't know the New Testament, but you claim the New Testament and don't study the Old. And I would, but not that one can be anything without the other. They are all really the same Testament. One is a fulfillment of the other. "The world says you should not judge a person for who they love. What about judging them for how many they love? If one man loves another man in a way that they want to become married," and I'm being careful with, I don't know who's listening on the live stream, but you know what I'm talking about. What if one of those men say, "Well, I love many men," and then the first man is hurt by that? You say, "Well, that first man should be hurt." Well, who are you to judge whether somebody can love many men or not many? And they say, "Well, that's just not right." Well, how do you know that? Where do you find that truth? The same place I find the truth that says a man shouldn't be with a man. God does not do this because he doesn't want people loving people. He does it because he knows this. Let me finish this thought first. Can a man who loves another man judge his partner if he loves other men too? Can we label anything as love, then condemn those who disagree with us as hateful? Who determines whether anything is right or wrong? Can or should anything be right or wrong? The truth is that when a man determines what is right and wrong, pain and destruction follows. It always does. It always does. If you take the smallest little simple thing, well, this part issue of my life doesn't deal with church. It's not a religious thing or it's not a biblical thing. There's nothing in this world that is not covered by the Bible. The Bible is all that is. God is, I am. And so we take these little things and we say, well, this is my opinion. That's, you know, the Bible may say this, but I kind of think this. That leads to pain and destruction in some level. It does every time. We learn that in, I believe it's Psalm 14, where it says, the way of man seems right, but that path leads to death. That, I believe, I'm almost sure it's in Psalm 14. There's a few of the Psalms there. But it leads to death. So let me ask you a third time. Do you believe the Bible? If it says that the way of man seems right, it feels right, I can't disagree with that. It's hard to argue that. But if I read the Bible, I have to say, no, it's my way, and that way must be wrong because it's not God's way. And so where do we find truth? Do you believe the Bible? I want to really center this reflection in Matthew chapter 24, if you would turn there. Why do we turn this into a little bit of a Sunday school class here? Why do we have communion? What's the purpose of communion? Remembrance of what? The Lord's death. Until he comes. And that's why I'm reflecting on the Lord's Supper today, because we are a lot closer to the till he comes than we are to his death. This is who he spoke to when he gave those two time periods. He said, you will do this from my death until I come and sup with you again, face to face with the Lord. When he puts his feet on the Mount of Olives, that will end what we call the church age. That will end the period of grace. And the millennium will start. The millennial kingdom will start. The kingdom is being built, but the kingdom will start then. We are part of the builders for the kingdom. In Matthew chapter 24, we're going to go through this. As Jesus left, in verse 1, and was going out of his temple, his disciples came up and called his attention to its buildings. He replied to them, do you see all these things? Truly I tell you, not one stone will be left here until another one that will not be thrown down. While he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples approached him privately and said, tell us when these things will happen. And what is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Jesus replied to them, watch out that no one deceives you. The disciples want to know when's the end. You notice he says, till my death, from my death until I come again. They don't come to him and say, when are you going to die? They say, when are you going to come again? That's the question that they are talking about in coming again. Maybe not even perceiving his imminent death is coming this very week, this day. And so, and he replies to them, the very first bit of advice he gives them is this. Remember this. He says, watch out that no one deceives you. These men have spent 3 years living with the Word of God, and Jesus is concerned is how easily they'll be deceived. How could we be any bolder in thinking we can't be deceived ourselves into falling away from the teachings of the Bible, the truth, to be drawn away from the truth, as we just sung in hymn, prone to wander. Verse 5, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Messiah, and they will deceive many. You are going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, because these things must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these events are the beginning of labor pains. They will hand you over to be persecuted, and they will kill you. You will be hated by all nations because of my name. Think of that. You will be hated by all nations because of my name. Do we see the beginning of that? Then many will fall away, betray one another, and hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, because lawlessness will multiply. The love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. This good news of the kingdom will be proclaimed in all the world as the testimony to all nations, and when the end will come. You know, sometimes we can live in a little bit of a bubble. Let me mark where I'm at there. Okay, 15. We live in a little bit of a bubble. When you live in a Bible, when you belong to a Bible-believing church, if you've grown up in a Bible-believing family, when you live maybe a little more rural, you don't realize how many churches no longer subscribe to what I'm saying here, actually finding it offensive across this world. Go to Europe right now. A woman in Spain, I think 2 days ago, didn't want to have her children vaccinated. So she figured, that's fine, I'll leave. You don't want me, I'll leave. She goes to Portugal. At the border, they take her kids. She no longer has her kids. She's not getting them back, from what authorities are saying. This, you think, how in the world could that be? They thought, how in the world could that be? This is end times. This is what we have. I don't know if Jesus is coming in 100 years or 100 seconds. I don't know that. I don't know the hour, but I do know the season. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. A man on the housetop must not come down to get things out of his house, and a man in the field must not go back to get his coat. Woe to the pregnant women and nursing mothers in those days. Pray that your escape may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. For at the time there will be great distress, the kind that hasn't taken place from the beginning of the world until now and never will again. Unless those days were cut short, no one would be saved. But those days will be cut short because of the elect. If anyone tells you then, see here is the Messiah, or over there, do not believe it. The false messiahs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders and lead you astray. If possible, even the elect. Not possible, but he's giving that if possible. Take note, I have told you in advance. So if I tell you, see, he is in the wilderness, don't go out. Or see, he is in the storerooms, do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the carcass is, the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not shed its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the peoples of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. He will send out his angels with a loud trumpet, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its branches becomes tender and sprouts leaves, you know that summer is here. In the same way, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near and at the door. He is commanding people who follow him, telling them they cannot know the hour he's coming. They don't know it. But you will know when I'm coming, the season. You will see, you will hear. You will shake your head. You will think, why is up, down, and you know, left, right, and where is truth, and where do I put my feet, and what do we cling to? What do we hold to? What's the center thing that all of us can agree on? Nothing. It's gone. It's chaos. And this is the end. And that's what he's telling us. We are to recognize it. It is a commandment of Jesus to his disciples to recognize that you're in end times. But before he even tells them of this command, he says what? Be careful you're not deceived. So I ask myself all the time when I weigh in on something, that seems controversial. Am I being deceived? And is this a sign I'm to recognize? We are commanded to do that. As a church, we need to be talking about this, hearing it, seeing it, preparing people. The urgency is here until I come again. Truly, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away till all these things take place, speaking of their own destruction. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Now, concerning the day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels or the heaven nor the Son, except the Father alone. As the days of Noah were, so in the coming of the Son of Man will be. For in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah boarded the ark. They did not see it. They did not realize it. The destruction was all around them. The signs were all around them. But what were they doing? They were eating. They were drinking. They were marrying. They were just going about their lives. In 39, they didn't know until the flood came and swept them all away. This was the way the coming of the. This is the way the coming of the man, the coming of the Son of Man will be. Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken. One left. Two women will be grinding the grain in handmill. One will be taken and one will be left. Therefore, be alert, since you don't know what day your Lord is coming. But know this, if the homeowner had known what time the thief was coming, he would have stayed alert and not left his house to be broken into. This is why you are also to be ready, because the Son of Man is coming at an hour you don't expect. And so, the concept here that I want to get past, especially if you don't know the Lord, think of this. I'm speaking to all of us, but I'm particularly speaking to those who are not saved when I say this. The rapture is coming where one will be caught away into heaven, and those that are left will face all this terrible destruction. Remember, he said he would save if it wasn't for the elect. But it's going to get worse once the elect are taken away. Imagine all the good and truth that the church permeates, puts out there, spreads all through this earth to keep things orderly. When that's taken away, what's left to a man's mind? When there's no more Bibles, no more church. Now, we know there'll be preachers during that time. But here's the thing. I remember when I was unsaved and I knew I needed to get saved, but I didn't want to let go of the world, and I knew I had to let go of the world to be saved, and some of you have been through that. And I went through that time thinking, well, certainly if the rapture happens, I just heard about it, so I'll know exactly what to do. Let me tell you this. If you are completely rested, it's a sunny day, it's nice, cool in the morning, and you look out and your grass is that high and you know it needs cut, but you just can't bring yourself to do it. Do you think you're going to do it when you're tired after work? It's 95 degrees, and you know what I mean? You think that you'll make that decision. You think that when the rapture happens, if you're left behind because you went to church and heard about it, if you weren't willing to do it when it was easy, don't fool yourself into thinking you'll do it when it was hard or the whole world was against you and it was just easy to give in. This is a call to those who are unsaved to be warned. Who then is faithful and wise servant, whom his master has put in charge of his household to give them food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom the master finds doing his job when he comes. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says in his heart, my master is delayed, and starts to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, that servant's master will come on a day he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where they will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. With all of that said in that reflection of Matthew chapter 24, the Lord is going to say, I think just two chapters later, I believe, is Matthew 26 when we have the Lord's Supper, I believe. It's right around there. But he knows this Last Supper is coming, and he tells them at the Last Supper at communion, he tells them, do this from my death until I come again. And it's till I come again that he's warning them about. That's what he's warning us about. We are in end times. You don't have to turn here, but let me read to you Luke 12, and we'll finish up here in just a minute. Clear to the end of the chapter here in verse 51. Do you think that I came here to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. Now that verse could obviously read, just reading after Christmas, you could think, I thought Jesus did bring peace on earth. He didn't bring peace to earth. He brought peace to us as a people in salvation. He is peace, but he didn't bring peace. He came to divide. For now on, five in one household will be divided, three against two and two against three. They will be divided, father against son, son against father, mother against daughter, daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. He also said to the crowds, when you see the cloud rising in the west, right away you say a storm's coming, and so it does. And when the south wind is blowing, you say it's not going to be hot, and it is. Hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and sky, but why don't you know how to interpret this present time? This is our calling. It's our duty to know the season and to warn people that this is the end, and not the hour, but certainly the season. And so he calls them hypocrites for being able to interpret these simple things about the weather. He also says in another part of scripture, we just looked at this in Sunday school, how when it's red at night, you know that you're going to have good sailing in the morning. Red at night, sailor's delight. But you know if it's red in the morning, what's going to happen? Sailor's warning. That's where that came from. It came from the Bible. He tells them the same thing that he tells them here. We're to know the seasons. Communion is a time of remembrance. Let's remember our calling as well as we remember how faithful Jesus was and still is to all that are his. 1 Corinthians 11:23, know the seasons, know that we are in end times. And in this reflection and remembrance of the Lord's Supper, I would like to ask that all of us take this communion. A lot of times during communion and reflection, because we ask people whose relationship may not be right with the Lord right now, we ask them to pass the elements and not take them. For those who do not know the Lord, we ask that you don't take the elements to participate in communion until you do know the Lord. This is for Christians. And when we do that, It's really because a lot of times when I take communion, I reflect back at where I'm wandering. Where am I falling away from the Lord? Where am I not being faithful to the Lord? I would like us to think of this reflection. Do we realize the time that we are in? Do we realize where we are at in our world? And do we realize what's going to happen to these people if left behind, if they don't know the Lord? And so I would like us to reflect on renewing our call to minister to the lost, to evangelize the lost, to remember that Jesus is coming again. That's a one. When that happens and everything's complete and everything's made right, what kind of day is that going to be? What kind of world is that going to be to live in? You know, where the lion lays down with the lamb, where the governments are all as one under the Lord. When truth reigns, when two people go for a dispute and truth wins, not one or the other. Both come out winners when the truth is won. What kind of world will that be? And that's what we look forward to when we take communion, because of the world we live in, because the times are so tough, because there's so much sin and pain and destruction in the world, we take communion so that we can remember he is coming again. And you ask yourself, why would he allow so much pain for so long? Why doesn't he come and put his foot down? You know why? Because there's one more he's after, and then one more he's after. He is long-suffering. Thank God he didn't do it before 95. We were married in 95. 1994. Thank God he didn't come before the summer of 1994, because I would have been left behind. And that's why he continues on. But there's only so long that he can deal with a Sodom or Gomorrah, that he has to judge, because that's who he is. So let's remember the Lord. Let's remember our call to the Lord, renew it, refresh it, and understand that he is with us in our stand against these lies, this destruction, and this pain. But he is also with us in his pure love, that we can reach out to people in love, not in argument, not in political discourse, but rather just in love to these people who are lost and dying in this world.